Are you still jumping into the Yixgame River, by the way? I have to ask for
this. Yeah, guys. Actually, you know what? In the end of season review, I'm actually going to address that tweet specifically. And we're going to have like it's not going to happen because.
No, there's no addressing that needs to be done. You simply need to post the video. And you can even jump there along, what is it, the N1, before, just before you get to the Buccleuch interchange.
They'll arrest me, fam.
Just, you know, pull over on the side of the road and then have somebody film it and then you share it, right? It's cold. I mean, the only reason why I think we will forgive you is because although we like to roast you, nobody deserves waterborne diseases like those that exist in the
Yixgame. Oh, God, Jesus. Can you imagine what's happening in there?
And it's lights out and away we go here at Spa. Hamilton gets away well. Perez as well. Valtteri Bottas has got his teammate right alongside him already. We have a safety car now deployed.
I really do need Wame. But you know.
Hopefully she comes back soon.
No, she will. No, she's around. She's around. Don't even worry about that. But hello, Naz. Good evening. And thank you for joining me. Thank you for joining us on the DRS Open podcast. How are you this? It's Wednesday. I know we just had a brief chat before and I thought it was still Monday. So that's a good sign of how I am.
Thanks for having me. I am well. Yeah, no, I'm really good. On this fine Thursday morning. It's been a very long week, but you know, it's not even the morning, it's literally the middle of the night. I'm having a laugh.
I don't know what's happened with like the perception of time. Like I think more broadly, COVID has made me lose perception of time. I've been having conversations with friends and I'll be talking about someone. I'll be like, no, man, I saw him the other day. And then I realized, no, I didn't. I saw him pre-pandemic, you know, but like it feels like the memories, because it was the last time I saw him. And, you know, like in this particular example, we were having a beer at News Cafe in Sandton, right? And I just thought to myself, no, it had to have been pre-pandemic because everything was locked down and all that sort of stuff. So I don't know, like whether you think it's Thursday, and I also think these things are just social constructs. I think if all wake up tomorrow and decide it's Saturday, who's going to stop us?
Who's going to stop us?
This is the value of mass action. But there's we had the final race of 2022 on Sunday, and I think it was perhaps the self-proclaimed funeral of the W13.
Shut up.
Yeah, so I was gonna ask how you're feeling about that, and I think that's already a good sign. Yeah,
relieved, you know. I hope, what is it, James Allison is cooking something as we speak, and that he's already cooked and all he needs to do is, you know, like garnish, finishing touches, because if we have to go through what we went through this year, I think I might just commit murder. Like, I'm
not. You're only threatening to, right?
And as somebody who does not yet have a fit and proper, that is a
what an I know. And it was, I don't know, it was a bit of a strange weekend because you know, you can't always just take one weekend in isolation, but like in the 3 weekends building up. And also, yeah, for the people listening, Naz and I actually recorded an episode that I bungled. Technology defeated me. Was it after Brazil? No.
Mexico.
Yes. So I apologize for that. But I think, you know, if we just, you know, put these things in context, it was 3 races in a row. It was the USA, it was Mexico, it was Brazil, where I would argue, you know, Brazil and Mexico, Mercedes were fighting on outright performance to win those races. USA, a little bit of luck, but that's racing. Like, you know, that's what you do. You can only put yourself in the best possible situation. So, you know, to get those P2s, the victory in Brazil, which was swashbuckling, it was 1-2, it was, you know, it left the field for dust. Abu Dhabi then, even on Friday practice, it felt like, you know, Mercedes might just surprise us, but not quite. Mm-hmm. Like, it was very strange. It felt like a very flat end to a great way. It would have felt great if Mercedes challenged at Abu Dhabi, given the three races before that. You know what I mean? You know, mm-hmm. as a sort of like momentum kickstart into 2023. I don't know. It was just weirdly flat.
Absolutely. No, I agree. I mean, it was a little bit bizarre because during the day, they seemed to be really kind of high up on in the timesheets.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much of that was kind of engine modes being turned down and Mercedes perhaps having a higher engine mode, but they genuinely looked like a good outfit during the day. And I remember I had a thought at some point where I was like, you know, I know we're in the desert, but how's about we just do the race like now?
like we do it early on,
let's just put the girls on the track and see what happens. So I was also very surprised by it. And I think the other thing that threw me off is because I think everybody around had kind of been saying, you know, they've set themselves up to have a really good race. So, you know, even if qualifying, I think you might have said this to me, even if qualifying is a little bit meh, they'll just, you know, they're trying to kind of make gains during the race, which is a thing we've seen them do and is a thing that Red Bull has done successfully. You know, if we look at how Charles has about nine poles, I think, this year.
11.
And he hasn't managed. 11. I thought it was nine.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Hectic.
Well, if I'm wrong, I apologize. But yeah, I think it's 11.
I mean, between 9 and 11. and I thought, and he hasn't really been able to convert. And part of that has been, yes, Ferrari has fumbled. But the other part has just been how kind of unbeatable and how good of a package Red Bull has had. So I thought, okay, well, if this is what we're doing, I still kind of felt like, I don't know about this. And then we get to the race and the girlies are falling behind. And I thought, oh, we finna chow Mr. Sainz. Like, you know, it's about to be a party. And then it was not a party, dear reader. It was dear listener, rather, I should say. It did not turn out to be a party. Just a dear listener.
I love dear leader. That's what they used to refer to Kim Jong Il, the former dictator of North Korea. Yeah, like it was weird. Like I remember, like getting very sidetracked in high school. Like we had to do like this creative essay, and I decided I'm going to try get into the mind of him. So like I like researched him as much as I could, and I tried to write his diary, what I imagined his diary would look like. But anyway, so that's how I know that he was called Dear Leader. And my apologies for cutting you off and getting
sidetracked. So I mean, like when we weren't cooking, then I was like, okay, what's going on? Like it was just weird. It felt very reminiscent of the 2022 season in the sense that Ferrari and Red Bull would kind of be miles ahead, and then they'd be like almost like a middle, or the third fastest car would be Mercedes, but it would only be Mercedes, and then the rest of the pack fell after that. So you know how they talk about like Formula 1.5? It felt like there was like a Formula 1.25, and that was where Mercedes sat, and everybody else was in Formula 1.5, and it was Formula 1 between Red Bull and Ferrari. So I thought like, okay, now what's happening? Is this a sign of things to come? But I think from what they've said, which I mean, sometimes believing Toto Wolff is a risk, a very big one. To me, it seems as though they know what direction they're going and they seem to have figured out what their problem is. And I think what remains then to be seen is whether or not they continue to try and develop in that direction, because they have said that apparently, according to them, the package that they have is the one that's going to produce the most in terms of like the long run, how long the regs are going to be around. Or are they kind of going to see that like this isn't working, perhaps we need to switch tack and perhaps bring in more side pods. The skinny one's just not working, girl. The outwash not doing the thing it needs to do, so please. So, you know, I think that'll be interesting to see what's happening. Just don't let me down. Like, I don't want another season where I have to watch in lifetime my team toiling, and every week we're being fed like propaganda at this point. But like, I remember in the beginning of the year when we started and we got to Bahrain and it was clear that we were not the girls we thought we were. And then Saudi Arabia, next thing. We kept getting told, first it was, okay, well, all of these tracks are outliers. Let's get to Barcelona. We get to Barcelona, the girls are still not cooking. We're told, no, I think it must have been either Miami or it must have been kind of like, let's get to around like France, baby. And then, yes, you know, they're like, and then we're going to cook. Then we get to France, nothing is happening. And I'm like, like we're running out of time. Like, please, somebody needs to fix this. So I would much rather that next year, you know, we just, we at least even if we're not contending for like top spot, but for us to be in the fight and for it to be a proper three-way fight, which might sound contradictory, but like, just like I said earlier, just how much of a gap there was between us and the teams that were properly competing for the championship was just, it was mind blowing.
Yeah, no, I think you actually said, you know, just before, like respond to some other things that you said, but like specifically on the race weekend. So Toto Wolff did admit that the track goes away from them in the evenings, right? So he actually said this after quali. But he also, so that was one thing. So you're 100% correct. Like if it was hotter, right, I think Mercedes would have performed a lot better. And like, it's crazy the margins that go into the sport. On the one hand, you might critically say, well, they always knew what time it was going to be. So the time of the race was never the actual surprise. But that just shows you how small the margins are in terms of setting up cars and getting everything right for a weekend, right? A few degrees difference in temperature could be all the difference. And we've seen that in a number of races, not just this season, but down the years. So you're 100% right. You're also very right because he also admitted after quali, and I said this quite facetiously on Twitter the other day, that they did set up for the race. So they did both those things. It's just that I think given that the race was closer to quali time, the idea that the track went away from them probably rang more true than whatever benefit they got from setting up for the race. I think, I mean, the start of the race was so strong, like it took Science. But then if you actually think about it in the context of what we're saying, Science came back at the two Mercedes, notwithstanding any potential damage to Hamilton's car after their first lap incident. It would have been as it got colder, right? Colder in the air, right? And sometimes that can result in a drop of track temperature. And that's all it takes for the performance to go away. And so, I don't know. Like, you know, like, I don't care. Like, about, I don't care.
I should not be bothered, but you all be safe after.
No, I couldn't be less bothered, but you know, I've got a lot of friends who support Mercedes and stuff like that. So I'm very interested in the story and interested in how they fight back, because I've always said what Mercedes and I believe Toto Wolff, you know, sort of engineered 8 seasons of dominance. Like it's an incredible feat of achievement. Mm-hmm. Like I don't know any other sports where, you know, there's weird anomalies in football now with Bayern and Juventus in German and Italian football. They're weird anomalies, but you never see extended periods of dominance. I think that one of the things that Mercedes are not given enough credit for is their ability to maintain their thing at the top. Like things like lack of motivation, getting things wrong, you know, sort of mechanically, these things can happen, but it just never happened to Mercedes. So like, I've got huge props to them. But of course, now this is like a completely different challenge, which is like, how do we catch up in a cost cap environment. Chuckle, chuckle, everyone in the back, whatever.
Besties, right. We are not Red Bull. We are not on the LinkedIn looking for a new accounting officer. That is not our story.
Was that post true? Were Red Bull really looking for a new accounting officer? Oh my God.
I think it was because somebody on Twitter who like used to work for Red Bull, everybody will know who I'm talking about. And I think I saw on his thing that it was like for real, that they were really looking for like an accountant. But I don't know, somebody could have been like taking the mickey and like swindled me.
No, I said it wasn't really real. I was hoping you didn't know it was real.
You're not going to catch me snipping.
You're not sneezing at all. Oh, I'm
no,
so upset.
Never me.
But yeah,
not
we had to
me.
Get rid of. We had to get rid of. You know, whatever Fugazi accounting was going on there. just a side
people
note.
People were cooking the numbers. Okay, like the
oh
the,
well, literally.
The cat breaks the side. You all like the catering department was working overtime, according to some people.
A side note, I am a little bit, you know what scares me a little bit is that whether or not you believe they did it intentionally or whatever, right? Whether they actively, if you believe, or if Christian Horner and everyone believes that what they did last year was correct, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why would they change it this year? Mm-hmm. And you know, like because these things only came out in what? Well, the leak in Singapore, end of September, beginning of October, right? That's 9 months. I don't know if the financial year runs from, I assume it runs from January to December.
I don't think it does. I think they probably work at least from like March until like March. But I do remember them saying that the big problem was just how long it took everybody to hand in all of their
yes,
numbers
yes,
and for the FIA to go through all of that. But nonetheless, continue.
But I think, yeah, regardless of whatever the reporting period is, and I think it would be worse if it is in January, but like if Red Bull sincerely believed that what they did last year was correct, why would they be doing anything different this year? At least until the point at which they were told, No. But that could be, if it is a January year start, if it is, that means it's 9 months of the year that's already run, you know, where you've been doing this incorrect thing that you thought was correct. And if they get nailed again next year, the ramifications would be, but I don't even want to think about that. So, you know what, it's fine. yeah, it's tough in a cost cap era. So, you know. So I think the challenge is really interesting for Mercedes now. I mean, they've clearly got talented people. They've clearly got the best driver pairing as well. I think Hamilton and Russell are just they're brilliant, and they, you know, they kept their heads up. They've got this annoying bromance. Bromance might be a bit of a strong word, but like there's a chemistry there, and I feel like there's almost an on-track chemistry as well, not just off the track, but you know, they race each other sort of, you know, hard but fair. But you know, because I think at one stage this weekend, George Russell sort of asked when again, I don't think it's been confirmed, if it has, my apologies, but if Hamilton's car was damaged, you know, then there was a phrase where George Russell was catching him, and he was sort of just like, all right then, so what's the flag? Yeah, and then whoever his engineer is said, yeah, no, you're free to race. I was like,
I think the best part of their relationship is just the respect they have for one another. And of course, that respect is kind of different because we know, you know, that that Russell looks up to Hamilton and really kind of sees him as somebody that he can learn from. But I think Lewis also respects the fact that Russell is the future, and that there's no point in kind of trying to go on the offensive and try and, like, you know, stake his claim and say, well, I'm the big dog here. And like, you know, the sun shines out of, you know, like the sun, that he's the most important one there. I think he also recognizes that in working with George, the only people that benefit really are Mercedes. And he seems to be invested in the team and its future. And so he's not threatened by Russell, which I think is great. I think what the media has tried to do is to kind of spin this narrative, you know, kind of do an Alonso Hamilton 2007, where the young gun is coming in and he's almost looking.
Or they tried their best.
Oh, no. I mean, in the beginning of the year on Sky, they were absolutely
I think they realized that particularly George Russell, because I think that was the way to antagonize the situation, because you had George Russell beating him in the Drivers' Championship, right? Whatever caveats you want to add to that, that was the fact of the matter. Mm-hmm. And there were one or two weekends where, you know, I don't think George Russell's performances must always be taken in comparison to Hamilton. In some weekends, George Russell was just simply brilliant, right? And we can talk about ifs and buts and race pace and Barcelona. You know, obviously Hamilton had his clash with Verstappen in Brazil. In Spain, but in Brazil with Verstappen, and you know, he fought back. But you know, Russell really had that race under control. There's no guarantee that Hamilton would have won it. But you know, I'm now getting into side stuff. I think, hypotheticals. But I think it's a really interesting time for them. Next year is really, really crucial because we know that this is the first year of a new regulation cycle, as we all know. Development curves are really steep at the beginning of a cycle, right? The teams will start to converge, and obviously the FIA has now started to do that also artificially in terms of reduction in internal testing time and FDCs and so forth for the teams that are at the front. You know, we might see an even bigger compression of the midfield. It's going to be exciting. I'm really genuinely excited for it. But, you know, it's nice. You know, well, not nice. It's not the word that I'm looking for, but sometimes, you know, it's a different kind of challenge, and seeing if people can respond to that. And I think they will, but, you know, whether it's going to be enough is a different thing. But anyway, we also had what I thought was a brilliant battle. How Sky like market these things? And they did really, really well, because I've been watching this sport for a long time. I don't ever really remember ever being interested in a P2 battle in my life, right? I tell you what, this year they sold it to us. I knew that they were on equal points going into the weekend. And, you know, there was even a little bit of them who were trying to make it a bit of like a Abu Dhabi 2021 insofar as, you know, drivers going to the weekend, winner takes all. You know, Red Bull have their issue between Max and Checo, or this supposed issue between the two drivers. You've got Leclerc.
Ain't nothing supposed about that. Come on now.
Pardon? Nah.
I'm saying ain't nothing supposed about that. Because, like, genuinely, I don't think it's supposed, because Max's mom got on the internet and started telling us about Checo's family.
I heard about that. I didn't actually.
Like, we didn't know. And B, ma'am, you are 50, I think, if you're not, shout out. Why are you on the Instagrams skinnering in somebody's, like, comments? Like, sit down. Go look after your grandchildren. Like, talk to them. Talk to your daughter. Talk to Kelly. I mean, y'all look the same. I don't know. Maybe you can exchange trips. I don't know. It was just very bizarre. And I think the way that the Verstappen family is allowed to move within Formula One, and nobody kind of says, okay, but now you're actually doing a lot. Like, I think the fact that, which I think they actually got better at, and I don't know if it's because Joss was just coming to less races, but whenever Joss was in Max's garage, like, the screen would be on him and we'd be told, oh, like, this is Joss Verstappen, like, this is Max's father, he's great. When, if we think about the kind of person that he is, and whether or not Formula One wants to be associated with such a person, you know, it just leaves a lot to be desired. Like, I get that he's a part of the story. He's an ex-Formula One racer, wasn't very successful, but he is one nonetheless. But and some of the things that have kind of come out. So the one thing that really made me upset was him saying that Hamilton was taking PEDs, performance enhancing drugs. That really annoyed me. And there was no kind of like responding to that with the absolute admonishment that it deserves. It was kind of like, yeah, he said this thing, but like, we're not really going to talk about that. And also then the weekend of Monaco, where he unashamedly on Max's website talks about how Red Bull is not putting Max in the best position. My nigga, if Checo were told to park his car on the side of the road so Max can pass, that is exactly what Checo would have done. Like, let's not get it twisted. Like, every single time Max is in the position, you know, where Checo has to sacrifice his race, that's a thing that's been done. So I don't understand how you can say, you know, that Red Bull did not put Max in the best position. You know, like, there's weekends where you're just not going to be on it. Now, we're not going to talk about the crash in quotation marks.
Listen, I think you've made unbelievable points. And I think for me, the guest on the show last week, is a lovely, lovely person. And I remember it was literally last year where I was chatting in a clubhouse room with her, and I learned that that Max was dating Kelly Piquet. Now, apparently they've been dating for years. But like, I'd never...
Like a year, maybe. But it's not like that. This is not her historic boyfriend. But anyway.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, whatever. And I didn't know about the whole Danny Fiat type thing or whatever. I've never really been someone attuned to the sort of off-track stuff. Like, I'm just using that as a foundation to one of the things that I'd always heard, because I think, you know, to talk about Jos Verstappen on this thing is quite frankly a waste of time. Not a waste of time, but it's a waste of energy, because I think he's well documented what a terrible human being he is. And I'm not trying to, you know, sort of use this platform to talk about him or anything like that. But I'd always heard that Max's mum, in and amongst all of this, was, I was led to believe, something of a voice of reason. Like, she was... You know, I don't know if they're divorced. I would hope so.
Yeah.
You know,
for her sake.
For her sake, I would hope that she, you know. And so I'd always had this image of her in my mind as someone who's just going to be a little bit more level-headed and sort of say to Max, okay, Max, you know what? Regardless of the public image or your team defending you sort of to the hill, in public, you know, you're hoping that there's someone in the background who can be like, okay, well, get your shit together, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So for her to be the one on Checo's Instagram.
Actually know that it was on his Instagram, but I know that she was on Instagram in somebody's comments.
Okay.
saying all of this stuff.
Yeah, and it's just like, but why? Because like you said, now it's a family thing. Now it's a family affair. And you've reminded me of Jos on Max's website. And you also wonder, you think to yourself, Max, you know, like, this is your own thing. Like, you're a 25-year-old man now, right? the whole young kid thing is starting to wear off, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was... Mm-hmm. You know, we could excuse it with all a bunch of like adjectives, eccentricity and, you know, passion, and whatever it is that you want to use to justify, quite frankly, shitty behavior, right? Mm-hmm. When he was 18, 19, 20, you know, it's a high pressure environment. You're 25 now. You are a world champion. Mm-hmm. You have seemed a lot more relaxed, you know, this year than in general. So like, take control. Lewis Hamilton, I can't remember when exactly it was, but it was, I think, after he'd become world champion, also had to cut his dad off as his manager. Not because, I mean, Anthony's obviously a fantastic person, but I think it was a lot about Hamilton starting to pave his own path for himself, because a lot of his story was so intertwined with his father, and that's not a bad thing. I hope I'm not, you know, coming across the wrong way about it, but it's just about, there comes a point in your life where you just need to take control of your own story and your own narrative. And, you know, like, your family can't be this thing that is used as a shield for you all the time, especially in situations where you don't need it, right? Like, you know, he was very brazen on the radio when he said, brazen might not be the right word, but when he said, you know, we discussed this in the summer, back yourself then, kiddo. You know what I mean? Like, okay, if that's your truth, then like live in it. And
stand 10 toes down.
stand in it. So where this incredible segue came from was, of course, the battle between Checo and Leclerc. And, you know, despite everything that happened and that we've just discussed before, Brazil and numerous other weekends, I think Red Bull did everything that they could to get Checo ahead this weekend. Max, you know, sort of tried to keep him in DRS for a long time during the first stint, and he did. Whether you think that's Perez keeping up with him or Max, you know, sort of holding back, it might just depend on, you know, where your sensibilities lie. But
no, it's not sensibilities, child. You said pick the right side.
Oh, Naz, I'm literally like, I'm having such a good time. But when Charles Leclerc was driving like a silent assassin, he dropped back from Checo Perez. And he was always about 4 or 5 seconds. So he was just outside of the dirty air. And he just drove beautifully from the get-go. He managed to create the gap behind him, whether it was Sainz, whether it was Sainz, Hamilton, or George Russell. You know, he was always, he was never in danger of an undercut from behind. And, you know, as he got to the end of the stint, he just started, you know, going 2 or 3 tenths faster than Checo, who was lapping round about the same time as Verstappen as well. And you thought to yourself, this kid is just brilliant. And we know what happens next. He ends up one stopping. And I would be really interested in your thoughts on this, particularly in the context that Ferrari, the whole year, if there's one criticism or if there's one thing that we just knew, we just took for granted, that Ferrari eats its tires alive. Here's a race where only 3 people successfully completed a one-stopper. And one of them is Charles Leclerc against a guy, Sergio Perez, who is known for his tire management. Like, that's literally what his whole claim to fame is, who two stops in a faster car. And yes, you know, towards the end, he got a bit lucky. Checo had to come through some bad traffic, some inopportune traffic. I think there was a time where Hamilton paid him back for 2021 and held him up. Hamilton was just like, not on my watch.
He was talking about how, you know, if Max has 2 titles, then Checo is responsible for 1 or both. I can't remember what he said exactly. Hamilton said, remember that. Hold And like, for me, that moment alone, driver of the day. Like.
So if he had
going to have the FIA gift you 11 seconds, right? Then, you know, I can think of no better way.
All is fair in love and war. And, you know, that's why
I think, though, with Checo, that this whole thing about him being a tire whisperer, I think works. This is going to sound controversial, when he's not in as good a car. Because I think that when you're in a top-running team, it's not just about having your tires in the right temperature or having your tires, keeping your tires in the right window in order for you to kind of make up positions or gain, you know, some kind of advantage on your closest competitors. It needs your ability to have both your ability to kind of to be a tire whisperer, for lack of a better word, and to also have the pace. And if you don't have those 2 things, it's then very difficult to compete in the front. I think for me, the thing that was very interesting about Checo being in the position of fighting for P2 is that we know that Red Bull have had the fastest car for most of the year, right? Yet it still took the final race for he didn't have it wrapped up sooner. And I think that is something that perhaps is a cause for concern, And perhaps, and I mean, I'm not saying that he's not a good driver. He's clearly a good driver. He's earned his chops in the midfield. But I think it was very interesting that in the year where your teammate has done exceptionally well in that car and been able to absolutely blow out, dominate, you know, the year, you haven't been able to put the P2 behind. And some people might say, well, you know, he was also assisting Max. So we think of Barcelona as a really big one. In terms of Max's championship fight. So, of course, he wasn't going to be at the forefront. But I just think it's really interesting. You know, some people might say that that's indicative of
Max's. I think you're absolutely right. And Naz, I think, like, everything that you've said, like, I don't know if you, like, actually, like, read up the stuff. Like, but if it's an instinct, I think you've got an incredible instinct, like, for the sport. Because the data...
I'm the best. I read.
Right? I read. But you do as well, because the numbers speak it up. So, you know, Checo was on the podium 11 times this season, right?
Mm-hmm.
Podium 11 times, where his teammate won 15, right? With a couple more podiums. I think it's 17 podiums max overall, right? Like, it's clearly equipment that was good enough to comfortably take first and second in the championship. And, you know, this is the second year in a row. And, you know, people always get mad at me for this, but I don't know why, other than, you know, but like, he went on that other stinking run of form again. And if it's, I'm trying to think which races it was. If it was, was it from Netherlands or until the Netherlands? But he went 6 races without a podium. Last year, he had a similar stinking run of form where he had 8 races where I think he only got points in 4 of them. It was also in the middle of the season. Now,
was that not around Silverstone where it seemed to kind of just absolutely tank last year?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a similar time this year, although he ended up finishing P2 at Silverstone to Sainz this year. But, you know, Austria, he was terrible. He was, you know, Max won from absolutely nowhere in Spa. I think he won from 14th. I don't think he got on the podium
and
there.
And Hungary.
And Hungary.
And Hungary, Max won
Max won from 10th, but he was battling, you know, middle of the season development Mercedes, excuse me, for that. And you just want to check out what exactly are you doing. So... He goes on these spells where he seems to just switch off in the middle of the year. I don't know how else to describe it, and he needs to cut it out. And if he doesn't cut it out, the fact that Daniel Ricciardo is sitting there lurking, and if he goes through a similar sort of, I can only frame it as a lapse of concentration, because I don't, I can't wrap my head around what else it could be. Then
you know
I
what
think
it reminds me
it
of?
Very, it could be in a lot of trouble with 24. Yeah.
You might be familiar with this. You know how when Serena would play, she'd be playing really well and then just have moments where she would have like a brain fart. And all of a sudden, like, she's dropping a set like 6-4 or something like that. Like, just like a silliness on a break point, and she doesn't quite, you know, get it back. And then all of a sudden she comes back in the third set and it's like 6-love or 6-1.
Yes.
Like, absolute dominance. So I think it does kind of have like that kind of wavy effect, but I suppose it's not like tennis, so it might be a little bit of a bad analogy, but I suppose the principle is there, right? That he has these moments where he's really good and he's like on it and he's on the pace and he's, you know, kind of not quite up to par with Max, but close and thereabouts. And then where it's just like, bestie, are you right driving for Red Bull, or like, are we still thinking this is Force India? Like, what's going on? Like,
absolutely. And so, you know, we spoke about how Sky build this up as, you know, winner takes all, and it really is winner takes all. But like, I think it's a little bit, again, my words aren't the best. It's not dishonest. I think it's disingenuous to frame this as, you know, he lost P2 at Brazil. I don't think it's that. It's a much longer season than that, and he has to take responsibility for what happened. That notwithstanding, I do really want to talk about Charles Leclerc, because I was so impressed by him on Sunday. I love segues. Segues are the best thing in the world. Because here's the deal. You know, obviously after Australia, You know, he was as far ahead as he was ever going to be in the World Championship, and it was huge. It was 54 points or something. I think people were even joking
at that. If we can go back.
Oh,
like we were convinced that like Ferrari were going to walk it.
Yes. Like, and I remember I was getting cooked at like 8:30. I had my friend's wedding the day before. And I woke up at like 6:45. And I was just like, okay, like, you know, like, okay, shucks, I just got home at like 2 a.m. from a wedding, which was big. And then I'm sitting watching this guy dropping the whole field. And then Max with DNFs, and yeah, the timeline was cooking me from very early on, but it's fine.
Of it which is. It's good.
All is fair in love and war.
Are you still jumping into the Yixkay River, by the way? I have to ask for this.
No, yeah, guys. Actually, you know what? In the end of season review, I'm actually going to address that tweet specifically, and we're going to have like it's not going to happen because...
No, there's no addressing that needs to be done. You simply need to post the video of the board. And you can even jump there along, what is it, the N1, before you get to the Buccleuch interchange.
Hey, they'll arrest me, fam.
Just, you know, pull over on the side of the road and then have somebody film it and then you share it, right? It's cold. I mean, the only reason why I think we will forgive you is because although we like to roast you, nobody deserves waterborne diseases like those that exist in the UK.
Oh, yeah. Jesus. Can you imagine what's happening in there?
Yeah. But alas, we were talking about Charles.
Yes. Oh, the poor kid. So, you know, I'm just so impressed. He has a Ferrari that eats its tires and he manages that to perfection. He's against a car that's clearly quicker than his in race trim, or should be quicker than his in race trim. Gets a little bit of luck, but he brings it home. And, you know, I remember after Austria. So obviously, by the time Austria came, by that time, it felt like the season was starting to slip away. But that was like a big weekend. I remember he came second in the sprint. And I remember being very strange. I must actually go look through my Twitter timeline. Because he had this huge smirk, sort of like, yeah, we've got them tomorrow. And I looked at this boy and I remember thinking, And as it turned out, they absolutely obliterated Red Bull on the Sunday. Truly, they clearly knew
which
more.
Which is marvelous.
Red Bull have only won 1 in 6 sprints, which is interesting, by the way. Mm. So that's something that they need to think about. But... you know, so that was another moment, but then he bins it in France. And I think there's a really, really great interview from the race with Charles Leclerc. It's a long form piece, you know, having a discussion with him, but he says France was when he knew the World Championship was over. But then he also speaks about a couple of other really interesting things. He talks about how Ferrari were frustratingly slow with their development, right? So there was this thing that like Red Bull are developing so aggressively and stop chuckling about cost caps at the back, right? And
I wonder
and,
why.
But Charles Leclerc, and again, I really recommend this interview. I'll post it on my Twitter because it's really brilliant. He talks about the slow pace of their development, which was frustrating, and all the things that they had to learn about Sunday and starting to focus more on Sundays because they clearly have a quick car, but they get so much wrong, whether that's him binning the car, the strategy team getting things wrong, the car itself not being set up for the race and eating its tires alive. Those three and, you know, just sort of generally or a mixture of all those things has really hurt them. But if you look at the last few races, this is a kid who's clearly worked on those things. And I think I tweeted earlier on the season, I was feeling very, you know, full of myself, whatever. But I said, he reminded me more of 2019 Verstappen than 2022 Verstappen in terms of his development. I think that's after he binned it in France. But Sunday, Abu Dhabi, it felt... It felt like the end of 2020 Verstappen, where you just thought, okay, like he's not made mistakes for a while. You know, he's not doing the things that we tend to associate with him. And so I'm worried about that kid. I'm very worried about that kid next year. And when I say worried, for me, it's obviously because I think he's not ready. I think he's not ready. That's the sort of drive. For me, it was the drive of the day by a country mile. Where I just think to myself, okay, he's got it now. He's something's clicked. And it's set up 2023 so nicely. So nicely. If Ferrari can improve on their weaknesses, Red Bull do have less development time, and you know, Mercedes have shown a steep upward curve at the end of the season, barring Abu Dhabi, we really could be in for a thriller. Like, I'm really excited now.
I mean, absolutely. I think the thing with Charles that I think that it is very impressive is I think he is thinking a lot more about his racecraft, and I think, like you said, is probably going to reflect long and hard about his campaign. And as much as we can say that part of that has just been absolute blunders on Ferrari's side, I do think that if this makes sense, I think that the Max that we have now this year, apart from the really good car, is a Max that has gone through an incredible kind of fire, if you will, in 2021, regardless of how it ended and the fuss that that was. I think that Max really benefited from a really close championship. And I think similarly, Charles will also benefit from having had this experience and knowing kind of what it takes to get there, even if he doesn't quite summit the mountain, if you will. But the fact that he's been able to be in the position where he doesn't kind of have an outsider chance, he's genuinely in the fight, and he's almost the main competitor, if you will, I think that will be of immense value to him moving forward. Whether or not, you know, I have thought a little bit about whether or not the solution for him or him winning the championship happens with Ferrari, which I think probably 9 out of 10 times it will, but also for him to probably start to think about like what he brings to the table and whether or not that can continue to be realized to its fullest potential in a team like Ferrari. Because I think it's one thing, like Ferrari needed to pick a struggle, and unfortunately they were just struggling on both ends, especially when it counted. And I think part of that might just have been them just... Because I think when you're like a midfield team, if you make a mistake, you make a mistake, but you're not deciding the championship, right?
Yeah, look at Magnussen. He's made plenty of mistakes, and most people
absolutely
think he's had a...
Really, and, you know, we'll praise him for his little pole, and we're like, you know, shut out. But it's very different when you're fighting in the front. And so in a way, I am really glad for him that he's been able to have this experience, because I think it will also then kind of teach him to kind of, you know, really hold on to his mettle and be able to move forward. So we'll see what next year holds. I'm certainly quite hopeful. I mean, in the ideal world, you know, next year it's a three-way fight. Lewis Hamilton absolutely dominates the field and, you know, he goes off into the sunset like that. That's what I want. But if it's not Lewis or Russell, then, you know, Charles, also your time is now. No, get it together.
Absolutely. And I think what you're saying is just so true, because I think I said this a couple of times during the season that Max, one of the, again, I'm being facetious, but an unintended consequence of the 2021 season, and this is regardless of whether Max wins the title or not, is that he got taken to places that only Lewis Hamilton can take you. And I think he has to also have that battle at that age has set Max up for a very, very long time. I think the flip side of the coin is that Leclerc is going to have to go to a place, because, I mean, this is the thing about Hamilton. Hamilton's relentless. He's absolutely relentless. I've never seen anything like it in my entire life. You know, he drove Alonso, and again, you know, people mustn't take this as, you know, not fighting or bickering, but, you know, he forced Alonso out the team. Heikki Kovalainen couldn't get a a sniff of him. Jenson Button, you know, to his credit, is probably the only driver who sort of stayed there with him, even if it wasn't always on track, but he never seemed to get worn down mentally. That's actually something really interesting. But then, you know, of course, then it comes to Nico Rosberg. Despite Rosberg winning a title, he literally retired afterwards because he's just like, I can't do this anymore. That was 3 years of fighting at the front. And then you had Valtteri Bottas. And remember how many times we used to have things about Valtteri 2.0, Valtteri 3.0, and it would never happen. He would crumble.
To him, it made concern.
You know, Valtteri is, you know, by all means, a lovely guy. And I think he, you know, to his credit, he didn't let it derail his career because he's had a very strong season at Alfa Romeo. But that's the nature of what Hamilton does. He just grinds you down. Like I've always said, second half of the season, Hamilton is just simply, you know,
he's a beast.
It's the most outrageous thing. It's the most outrageous thing. Like, anyway, whatever. Like, I'm absolutely gushing about that. So in that context, the spin-off is that Verstappen has that experience. And I think, you know, if you're going to beat Verstappen in the future, you're going to have to do something that approximates that. Now, obviously, Max also has to maintain his level. If he starts to get complacent and all those sorts of things, you never know. You never know how he's going to be cut out. And it's going to be really, really interesting. But it's weird because I was just thinking about him and I wondered if he got complacent or if he got worn down. But someone else that got worn down by Hamilton but seems to have finished his career on an incredible high, Sebastian Vettel. Like, I am grinning from ear to ear as I think about this. Like, I mean, what a finish to the season. America. he was out of this world.
I would actually say all the way back to Japan. I think from Japan onwards.
Yes, Japan. Really, yeah, Japan. Singapore in the wet again, because that's just what he does, Sebastian Vettel. Pretty much since he announced that he's retiring, he's just, you know, gone to another level. And it was really nice to see the sport come together.
I think he's
unanimously liked. But something that we spoke about in our last recording that we didn't hear, but I'd like to speak to you about it again, Naz, is this idea of character arcs, because the Sebastian Vettel who got his send-off on Sunday is not the Sebastian Vettel we saw at Red Bull. Now, you know, we might talk about, well, who's the common villain here in terms of his character. But, you know, what do you think about, you know, character arcs? What do you think of Sebastian Vettel and, like, his sort of legacy, I guess, that he leaves in the sport?
So I think a part of the whole character arc thing is also just a consequence of getting older. Yes. And I mean, I'm only 24, so I have no real life experience to talk about. But I think in watching his career and seeing kind of how in the beginning he comes in, like, he's brash, he's hot-headed, we all know that he's very good, and he really kind of stakes his claim on the Red Bull team. And I suppose perhaps then even how post the 2014 regs, we see things kind of start to take a downward slope, how that also might have affected the kind of person that he is. And so I think, you know, to me, it's also a reminder that you're never kind of one thing for all of your life, that you grow and move in different directions. And I think that that's something that's really important to take cognizant of, just in general as like a person, that it is entirely possible for you to start off in one place like he did when he first started off and be in a completely different place now. Now, some people might argue that part of that has just been, like I said, him not being in good teams or, you know, not having the best opportunity.
Maybe being humbled.
Absolutely. But I think, you know, like, so what? Like, I think there's lots of things that that contribute to how a person grows and is shaped. I think we can absolutely never take away from his legacy and the fact that, like, when he was at, like, we can talk about him being like a merchant king, but like when he was at Red Bull, like, he was good. Like, like nine wins in a row, like, that's one after the other. You're just taking like P1. Like, and I think even his dominance in terms of most wins in a season where the season isn't 22 races long or 21 races, where the season, I think at that point, must have been what, like 18 or 16, maybe even 20.
Yeah, it was up to 19, but it's fine,
But, you know, just that ability to be so consistent and so dominant is just fantastic. And I think, you know, I think the other thing that I really appreciate about Seb is how he came to a point where he realized that, like, there are other things in Formula One that I find interesting. There are other things that, you know, that I think I can contribute as a person to. I think that that's a very important thing to think about. And I think, you know, like, again, we can contrast that with him suffering a dip in form, and whether or not, if he had continued at the same level, he would have had the same considerations. I like to think that he would. But, you know, we are where we are. So, I mean, shout out to him. It's been absolutely fantastic to see him really kind of reflect on his position in the world, and what kind of life he wants to leave behind and legacy. I think it must have been either Ted or Crofty who said to him, you know, he'll feel like if he comes back to Formula One, that the other things that he's done outside of Formula One, he will have failed in if he still feels the need to come back. So, I mean, I say that to say, like, Seb, fantastic. Nobody can touch him. And his development as a person has been particularly interesting to see. And I think it's great that he is where he is now. It was fun. Shout out to him.
Yeah, it was, and I think, you know, like, the one thing about one thing I always have to say to, like, the merchants is that I think we collectively misremember the Red Bull dominance from 2012 to 2013. 2010 and 2012 are two of the closest seasons in Formula One history, right? Sebastian Vettel only led the world championship in the last race, when he won at Abu Dhabi. It was the only time he'd led the championship the whole season, right? And then in 2012, we had this four-way battle between himself, Fernando Alonso, Mark Webber, and Lewis Hamilton, right? Where even up to the last race, whilst Hamilton, I might be fibbing. But if it wasn't, then it was the second last race where Hamilton was still unlikely to win the championship and he was fourth, right? It was still mathematically possible. So that's how close it was. And it was a four-way battle. And I think he only won 2012 by 3 points. This idea that it was just 4 years of
dominance on his part
from start to finish is not true. That's someone he showed 2011, 2013, for sure. All right, he cruised to those titles like it was a breeze. But, you know, he showed a different type. He showed grit. He showed resilience, particularly for the first one. You know, we all remember "Don't You Worry, Sunshine." And so, yeah, I mean, I think I've said everything that I've wanted to say. I've shared about it on the socials. He had a remarkable career, and it's just, you know, like you said, Personally, as someone, like, I've always seen, I don't like taking snapshots of things in time. I do like to sort of, like, reserve my judgment. I'm not suggesting by any stretch of the imagination that I thought Sebastian Vettel would turn out to be, you know, this sort of
a well-rounded,
almost mother-like figure of the grid. Not by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, he went to Ferrari, had a brilliant season in 2015. It was just a very shit Ferrari. I mean, they just got outdeveloped in 2017, 2018. That's when he crumbled. But it would be interesting because, I mean, he's got three kids. I don't know how old his kids are.
I think this, the oldest one might be less than eight, so very young family.
Yeah, so, you know, this is a guy who, you know, I'm by no means attributing the Hockenheim crash to him having kids, but I think the perspective about what's important in life, yeah, no, I mean, you know,
those are guys. Are about to say, Langa said that the reason why Faye fell off is he had children. And he saw his wife flash before his very eyes and said, "Not me, ma'am. Not me."
It's going to be that it was that relentless Hamilton that Hamilton pressure that just, and I mean, remember Hockenheim, because he'd won at Silverstone the week before and had the German flag and he was sailing away at Hockenheim. Oh, Vettel. Jeez. Anyway. And then he the number. Yes, so we've been going for, yeah.
I think we have spoken about whether or not his career is comparable to Daniel Ricciardo, which is something that I would like to get into very quickly.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. That's true.
I don't think that he's quite the right, that the analogy between, that they're quite analogous is actually what I'm trying to say. Mm, yeah. Because I think that, so regardless of what Sebastian or where Sebastian Vettel is now, we can't take away the four world championships and the absolute dominance that he was in his heyday. Whereas if we contrast that with Daniel Ricciardo's heyday, like, I mean, I think Daniel Ricciardo before Saudi Arabia, whenever it was, where he said he was just vibing life and he didn't listen to the news. No, and like, really, that pissed me off. I don't want to lie. Like, I've said this, I think, before on some other platform, but like, that is just the whitest thing that you can say. And it's just indicative of how much like you can move through life and there's no kind of real kind of ramifications of consequence in terms of what you do in your life. Like whatever happens, you'll be okay. You know? And so it doesn't matter that you don't know about things that are happening around you because it doesn't affect your life and it doesn't affect the people around you. So why would you care? And I think the way in which I think the other thing then that really upset me about that is every single question was being asked of Hamilton, like in terms of what he was doing or what his thoughts were. And it's like, sir, there are 19 other people on this grid that you can be asking this question to. It's not Hamilton's responsibility to bring change into Formula One. Yes, he's come across and put his hand up and said, you know, this is something I'm interested in, you know, but it can't be that the only black person on the grid is now being tasked with trying to single-handedly save Formula One and save the world. And everybody else kind of just gets to ride on those coattails and say, well, you know, I'm just vibing through life. But that was,
agree more. I couldn't agree more. Like the idea that this bird, that because you're interested in something or because you are something, you know, we see it in corporate, right? We see it in all spheres of society when that first black person or that first black woman or whatever the case may be, you know, breaks the barriers, they suddenly are given all this weight of expectation and you know, they are suddenly propelled to be this beacon of hope and change, oftentimes when they didn't even ask for it. Right? And that's a fundamental problem with it. Because I think you're right, there was not just Saudi Arabia, but I remember there was a weekend where there were protests. I think we spoke about this at the live recording, actually. I think it was in Canada. And there was also protests in Silverstone. And I remember thinking to myself, like, why is Hamilton being the only person being asked about these environmental... There might have been a semblance of a question to Seb, you know, because, you know, Hamilton has been so pro-environment. So you're quite right. That level of obligation for a person, or rather the absence of responsibility for the others. I think that's what we're really talking about here for Daniel. In this particular instance is nonsense. Sorry to
cut you off. So I think, you know, no, all of that aside, I think if we think about, I think what Daniel Ricciardo has, what, like 8 race wins?
Yeah, 8 race wins, yeah.
The most memorable thing for me about Daniel Ricciardo, those things aside, is like Monaco. And how he was Mr. Monaco. So it's like, you know, yes, you've had a very good career. I mean, you know, you have a few race wins under your belt and you have several podiums. And there was a point at which I would say maybe when he left Renault, he seemed to be looking like, you know, like there's something about him that looks like it's poised to strike. And the fact that he never quite lived up to that, I think makes it very difficult to try and draw parallels between their careers, apart from the fact that they were both Red Bull drivers. So I think, you know, like, and that's okay. Like, not everybody is a Seb, not everybody, you know, will have a magnanimous career and a, like a career that you look back on and say now, like, what a legend, like what a beast. And so I thought that, you know, like, if Daniel, for me, the closest comparison I would say that Daniel Ricciardo has is probably someone like Hulkenberg, in the sense that when they've left, they still kind of been a, while they could have been, you know, of course, you know, Hulkenberg is struggling with a podium at the moment, nearly a podium to be found, and he's coming back to
Haas. I'm so upset at that stat, and it's only going to get worse next year. And,
it is, because he's in a shit car, really but, good. You know.
Yeah, I think it's really good. K-Mag put a pole in Brazil. Let's never forget. The streets must never forget. K-Mag was on pole at Brazil. But anyway.
So, I mean, I think, you know, like, it's kind of, I don't think that Hulkenberg is not a good driver, because he's in Formula One. And he managed to be in Formula One for a prolonged period of time. So I don't think that the chat as whether or not he's a good driver. I think the chat is whether or not he had that extra, you know, kind of how we talk about how Checo is a good driver, but he doesn't have that extra bit to be at Max's level. VB is a very good driver. He just doesn't have that extra bit to get to Lewis's level. And so I think we then start to do a shades of comparison where different people bring different things. And I think, you know, will Daniel Ricciardo come back? I think, yes, I think we might get the same situation that we had with Hulkenberg, where he comes back to kind of a midfield team, but kind of in the back half of the midfield, you know. I mean, I've made my feelings about him quite clear and about how I wouldn't be mad at that. But, you know, is he a Seb? No. So he needs to sit there and hold his L. Do I think that...
Yeah, absolutely.
Do I think that Checo has anything to be worried about? No, because I think, despite the fact that I think that Checo is not at Max's level, I think that he's shown that in this car he can do something. Like, the one thing that he has been able to consistently do that his that Max's previous teammates have not been able to do, is to pick up the scraps when Max is out of it. Like, in Singapore, he was able to get himself, you know, to win. Saudi Arabia, he was able to get the pole.
Saudi Arabia should have won that. He was just really unlucky. He would have won that race.
Yes.
If it wasn't for the safety car. Yeah, absolutely.
And so it's like, there are things about Checo that, despite him not being quite as good as Max, and we can dog him out for the season that he's had, but I think there's still, you know, like, just he has that edge on Daniel Ricciardo, that I think that if Daniel Ricciardo were to be put in a Red Bull tomorrow, he wouldn't be able to reproduce quite like Checo has been able to do. So that is my assessment.
I get you. And I think, you know, just to be slightly more cynical, I think that Red Bull have put Daniel there to keep Checo in line after the recent shenanigans. They're just sort of reminding him that if you step out of line, we can replace you. And just a reminder, and this is it's non-verbal. It's just being communicated in the background.
Soft power, they call it.
Yes, that's exactly it, soft power. And in terms of style, I mean, I've always said Ricciardo loves really pointy cars with lots of front end. He's very good at handling rear limited cars. Style wise, the Red Bull is perfect for him. I don't think it's going to happen. Like you said, I think if Checo just keeps himself together, he'll be fine. But we have to unpack this stuff. And I'm just conscious of your time and the fact that we've just been talking for just over an hour. I hope you join us. We're going to have a couple of very focused sort of debriefs. So we're getting a lot of different fans and people on the timeline and so forth to speak about pretty much their team. So, you know, if you would join us for the Mercedes chat, we would love to. So it's going to be like, but it's going to be like, it's going to be a collective effort. There are going to be a couple of us. Unashamedly go in about, because there's always this pressure. Sometimes we feel like, oh, got to talk about these different teams, but like, actually, no, screw it. It's postseason.
As long
now.
As we don't have your friend from Ferrari, who is absolutely insufferable.
He's on the Ferrari episode, so we're actually having different episodes for different
groups. Thank God we won't all now be on the same episode, because I think I actually, like I said, I really would like to be a lawyer. I want to get my foot in proper. But sometimes, you know, if the time allows, we need to...
He's brilliant, though, and he's loved Ferrari.
I mean, very
he's
nice loved Ferrari person.
Since we were, like, little kids. Like, so.
Yes, geez, sit down. So, you know, with all due respect.
No, we will. And honestly, I've been, you know, sort of had a grin on my face from the start of this conversation. This has been amazing. I think your insights into the sport are phenomenal. I love chatting with you, and you know, we don't always see eye to eye, but I mean, that's the beauty of it. We can see eye to eye and not see eye to eye and learn something from someone who sees the objective same thing but through a different lens.
Absolutely.
You're absolutely fantastic. It's been lovely getting to know you this year
on
Twitter and stuff, and if only for you and a handful of other people, I hope the W14 is a better
thing. Let's speak it into
only for a handful of people.
Start manifesting.
No. yeah. Like
we need to start 11-11ing. Like we need to do like a little goat. Somebody get a white goat so we can speak to the underground gang. I don't know. Like we need to do something. Like whether it's prayer circles that need to come back. The girlies in Brazil need to come back. We need to do something.
Yeah, I mean we had. Mbali Matu on earlier this season, and she's you know, works in the Civil Aviation Authority, and she was telling me about how this wasn't the episode, so I'm not saying nonsense, but like they knew that Hamilton flew via South Africa, and maybe if he's learned his lesson, he's gonna stop here this time, and then Nimenzele Umcimbi, basically.
It's also a bit weird because you need to know which people you're contacting. You can't
roadie.
And now here you are like trying to do razzle dazzle, and then now like you're unlocking spirits you don't know. So like also don't play with that stuff.
maybe, and who knows, but who knows where he'll be. But again, Naz, let me not keep you up too long, and I hope to see you soon, speak to you soon.
Absolutely.
And yeah, this is such a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. It was really a good time. I think, like you said, similar to what you said, we are able to kind of see, I think for most of the time we're on the same page about things. We might just differ on the nuances. But I think it's been also really cool to kind of see somebody who is sensible and level-minded. And is a Red Bull fan, because let me tell you, that, friends, is a cognitive dissonance. But then you're a Red Bull fan. But, you know,
I actually have
a friend who supports Red Bull and supports Max. But, you know, I speak to you more, therefore you are my favorite of the two.
I'd love to meet this person, because there are not many of us out here. Not many of us out there. It's a bit of a jungle.
So, I mean, it's quite, you know, it's really cool to speak to somebody who is unashamed about their support for Red Bull, but it doesn't come from kind of, I find that sometimes, if you'll allow me to go on this tangent, Verstappen fans tend to be Verstappen fans, not necessarily because they appreciate racing or they appreciate Verstappen's racecraft, but because he is a competitor to Lewis Hamilton, and because they don't like Lewis Hamilton, they find somebody who seems to be challenging him and they jump on that bandwagon, which I think is also kind of a signal to how good Lewis Hamilton is, that you have to jump on his competitor, like
absolutely.
But I think what's really cool about you is your support for Red Bull is not grounded in that. Like, you genuinely have an appreciation for the sport and how it works, and you just so happen to support the wrong team. It doesn't make you a bad person. It makes you a little bit of an interesting person between you and me. But
You're very kind. You're very, very
so,
kind.
So, you know, shout out to you. Like I said, you and Wame. I think the beauty of this is the fact that you guys support two different teams, but whenever I've listened to the two of you speak, I don't feel like I'm fighting two people. I'm listening to two people fight, and I'm like, in my ears, please. So, you know, shout out to both of you. Because, you know, sometimes you just get on podcasts and it's just, it's chaos. And you're like, do you people even like one another? Because
and
you just say the wrong thing, and then, you know. But the two of you, I think, have a really good chemistry and really good ability to look at things in a way that is well-reasoned, in a way that makes sense, which I think sometimes can be lacking in the F1 community.
Ah, yeah, you're going to make me emotional. I appreciate that. And I,
well, please don't like cry, because I'm just
I do like her. Yeah, I do quite like her. And we're able to, you know, there's conversations that we have outside of Formula One, believe it or not. And I think maybe that's the key. Maybe that's the key. And F1 just needs to grow up a little bit.
Touch grass.
Get a personality.
Touch grass, my friends. There are wonderful things out there for you. If you were
and the season is over. It's over. Mm. It's over. It's gone. You don't have to think about anything. You don't have to watch preseason testing. I remember this year, another tangent, like when people started watching like testing, and I was just like, I have never watched this thing in my life. Like, no one's taken like such an interest in testing. And I was like, you know what, guys, we just need to, because last year the season ended middle of December, you know. Mm. I was just like, go away, just leave it. Leave it. It'll be there. The cars will be there. There'll be qualifying and practice in Bahrain, and maybe that's when we should tune in again. Because no one really knows what's happening in preseason testing. No one knows. None of us.
No, we just arrive in Bahrain on what is it, the 3rd of March, I believe, this year, and we'll see what happens.
So early. I can't believe how early it is. They need to get a grip. Need to get a grip.
No, because Stefano Domenicali is trying to get them coins in. He said Neri are back to be missed.
He's going to be gone after 3 to 5 years, because they're going to, this is the administration that's going to squeeze everything they can out of the cash cow. And then once they've drained it for everything they can get, they're going to bounce. The next buyers
and we'll be stuck picking up the pieces.
Yeah.
So, you know, but that is a talk for another day.
Yeah, 100%. We'll chat to you as we come.
Cheers.
Cheers.